Welcome to the Left of Lansing podcast with your host, Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. A, dare we say, entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how we can best make Michigan's political machine work for the people. And now, live from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's Pat Johnston.
Yeah! Welcome to another installment of the Left of Lansing podcast. I'm your host, Pat Johnston, getting ready to bring you progressivism with passion for the next 30 so minutes. If you're listening for the first time, thanks for giving this podcast a try. Now, this is a podcast that talks about the progressive movement that's happening here in Michigan. It's a podcast that presents those who are on the front lines, fighting to reverse decades upon decades of destructive conservative policies that led to Michigan's decline. It's a podcast that's dedicated not only to helping to reverse that disastrous trend, but to help provide a roadmap on how Michigan can once again become a leader in this country by fighting for strong and true progressive values. And it's a podcast that will show change can happen if only we grasp that one quality that many of our younger Michiganders seem to have figured out: political courage. You can always email me at leftoflansing@gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter. That's at leftoflansing. Left of Lansing is also on Facebook. And I haven't decided just yet, but I am actually considering getting Left of Lansing on Instagram. Ooh, we shall see. But please send me a message and let me know what you think of this podcast. Coming up here in a few moments, Julia Pulver will join me. Now, Julia is a registered nurse. She runs Women Organize Michigan and fell just short in her bid to flip a Senate seat from red to blue around the Novi South Lyon area. And she did it by doing the hard work and showing how a strong progressive message can resonate with potential voters. If anything, Julia's fight shows that progressives must fight in every part of this fine state. We just can't be fighting in Southeast Michigan. We can't just be fighting in Kalamazoo. We can't just be fighting in Traverse City. No, we have got to be fighting all around the state of Michigan. Put the pressure on the conservatives. Take the battle to them. Isn't that what I always say? I'm also having Julia on this week because I highlighted an article that she wrote in the last podcast in which she gave a thorough takedown on the new auto insurance reform bill. Like my guest last week, State Senator Mallory McMorrow, Ms. Pulver is less than enthralled by this bill. Look, I understand that some felt like they had to sign off on this bill because thousands of Michiganders are upset with their expensive insurance. I understand that. But there's much that could have been done to help lower costs without giving away so much. I know some Democratic representatives are already trying to add amendments to help fix parts of the bill, but I wouldn't count on the Republican leadership doing much to allow those changes to ever take place, at least right now, unless, of course, we continue to replace those bought-off Republicans with true progressive fighters. Speaking of State Senator Mallory McMorrow, congratulations on getting to introduce Democratic Senator and presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren at a rally in Lansing this week. Woohoo! Now, according to reports, Senator Warren heard State Senator McMorrow on an awesome podcast last week and said, hey, I need to have her at my rally. Okay, well, there's really no documented proof that actually occurred. But, you know, that's how I like to think it all went down. Actually, according to accurate reports, Senator Warren called McMorrow and asked her to attend the rally. Senator Warren, you are a brilliant woman. And let me tell you, you made a great decision to have Senator McMorrow intro you. And regardless, I'm still going to chalk this one up to the Left of Lansing podcast. I am. I'm just going to do that. I'm going to chalk this up to McMorrow receiving the Left of Lansing mojo bump. Because, hey, I'd like to take credit when I can, especially when it's never really deserved. You know, kind of like how Donald Trump takes credit for the Obama economy whenever he can. Once again, congratulations, Senator McMorrow. Well done. You know, considering some of the changes that have happened here during the last year with progressives gaining seats in the state legislature and then progressives winning statewide seats like Secretary of State, the Attorney General's office, and Governor Whitmer succeeding Republican Rick Snyder, it seems so long ago when the Flint water crisis made national and daily news, to be frank. But here's the truth. It went down not that long ago. In fact, thousands of children who suffered lead poisoning are living with Rick Snyder's failed leadership for the rest of their lives. In fact, you know what? Hold on a second. Shh, shh, shh. Wait. Do you hear that? Tumbleweeds just blew across my studio. Yes, one tumbleweed after another, because the silence from the Michigan anti-choice or the so-called right-to-life movement has been deafening. Oh, completely deafening. I'm not hearing a word from them. I haven't heard a word from them when it comes to the Flint water crisis for the past 5 years. You think with infant mortality rates rising after the man-made crisis started, the right-to-life groups would have been demanding Snyder's resignation years ago when he was governor, and for him to be under constant investigation. But they didn't care about those pregnant women for some reason. I don't know why. Something tells me the whole movement really is not about life per se, but about owning and punishing women. But I digress. Now, years have gone by, but still not one person has served time or been held accountable for the Flint water crisis. That is amazing. Flint residents were beholden to Rick Snyder's emergency managers. They had complete control over the city. Snyder was a big believer that unelected government officials were the only answer to fixing struggling cities. A lot of these cities, by the way, tended to be poor with high minority populations. I know, what a coincidence! While trying to run Flint on the cheap because, you know, that's how Republicans believe government should operate for us, on the cheap, Snyder's emergency managers ordered Flint's water source to be switched from the Detroit water system to the Flint River. The emergency managers thought that the switch would save money until another pipeline connecting Flint to Lake Huron was completed. So they switched Flint's drinking water from the Detroit Water Authority to the Flint River. And they did it without treating the water so the pipes would not leach lead into the water system. Wow. Problems began to arise quickly. Now, there's a misnomer out there. The right wing has tried to say for years that the Flint City Council voted to switch from the Detroit Water Pipeline to the new KWA pipeline. Come on, Pat. Okay. The Flint City Council did vote to switch from the Detroit Water Pipeline to the new KWA pipeline, but that wasn't going to be ready for years. They never, ever voted to switch to the Flint River in the interim, and you know what? It doesn't matter, because their votes had zero power, zero, zilch, no power, thanks to the emergency manager law passed by Michigan Republicans and Rick Snyder in 2013. Now, Please recall that voters passed a ballot proposal to eliminate the emergency manager position back in 2012. But in true Republican fashion, they drew up another bill that not only essentially reinstated the emergency manager position, but blocked it from ever having to undergo another ballot initiative. How grand. Remember, Republicans are always about the people. In 2013, then emergency manager Ed Kurtz made the decision to switch Flint's water source from Detroit to the Flint River. Now, let me repeat that one more time for some of you. In 2013, then emergency manager Ed Kurtz made the decision to switch Flint's water source from Detroit to the Flint River. That's a fact. And it's a fact the Snyder administration tried to straight out lie about and say never happened. It did happen. So problems started to sprout quickly. General Motors stopped using the Flint River water at its engine plant in 2014 because officials feared the high levels of chlorine would corrode its parts. Right then, you think that somebody would have, you know, said, huh, that's not right. GM's no longer using the water. They think it's bad for the parts. If it's bad for their engine parts, maybe it's bad for the human body. I mean, right then, you would have thought that would have captured the attention of the emergency managers, but they did nothing. Months later, emails passed back and forth between Snyder's closest confidants within his administration, including his chief of staff, Dennis Muchmore, and these emails showed that these closest confidants were extremely concerned of the news about Flint's water quality. And yet still, Rick Snyder, for one reason or another, had no clue what was happening with one of his state's cities. Meanwhile, thousands of children drank the lead-tainted water, which will affect them for the rest of their lives. And a Legionnaires' disease outbreak occurred, killing a handful of people. While 15 current and former government officials, including two within Snyder's cabinet, have been charged with crimes, no one is in jail. No one has been held accountable. Former Republican Attorney General Bill Schuette made some charges, but it seemed like his officials moved rather slow. People who rob banks are sent through our judicial system at a far faster rate, and they didn't poison anybody. I guess it pays, once again, to be connected. But thankfully, with a new Democratic Attorney General, we're starting to maybe get some movement here on this case. And more importantly, we're starting to investigate the people who need to be investigated, including the former proud governor himself. News broke this week, according to the AP, that Solicitor General Fadwa Hamid and Wayne County Prosecutor Kim Worthy, who was helping with the probe, confirmed that they executed a series of search warrants related to the criminal investigation of Flint's lead-contaminated water in 2014 and 15. Now, one of those search warrants included Snyder's public state-owned phones and laptop computers, and more. Now, Snyder released a snarky statement saying that he had no idea what these officials are looking at. After all, he was the nerd. Remember, these warrants were requested, according to the AP, after boxes of records were discovered in a basement of a state building, including phone extractions and a trove of other materials stored on hard drives that allegedly had not been turned over in a response to the subpoenas. Wow. So remember, please remember this. The cover-up continues. Rick Snyder and his people and the Michigan Republican Party are hoping that you will forget about the true facts of this case because it will expose them on how running government on the cheap affects people's lives for the rest of their lives. That's what they want. They don't want you to remember this because it exposes the corrupt nature of not just the Rick Snyder administration, but of the Republican Party. Which is why I've always been telling you that Donald Trump is not an anomaly within the Republican Party. Donald Trump is a byproduct of the Republican Party. Donald Trump is the Republican Party. The Republican Party is Donald Trump. Michigan Republicans want you to forget all about the Flint water crisis. But we will never forget. And we will keep pressuring the AG's office to keep investigating. This was a man-made disaster that never had to happen. It was a man-made disaster that happened in an American city. If ISIS had poisoned an American city's water system with lead, do you think we would have just taken this lightly? No, we would have demanded answers. We would have demanded somebody to be held accountable. This was a man-made disaster. And it happened because Republicans like Rick Snyder wanted to run poor cities on the cheap. And people were poisoned and people died in a Michigan city, in an American city. This is why we should never trust Republican leadership again. And this is why we must push until justice is done for those who died and those who will have to live with the decision to run government on the cheap. Never, ever forget.
Thanks for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. Want to give Pat a piece of your mind? It's easy to reach him. Just send an email to leftoflansing@gmail.com. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information.
All right, well, thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast, and thanks mostly for subscribing as well. All right, well, my guest is someone who I have quoted a few times during the last month on this podcast, and she's written some scathing articles on the Michigan right wing's constant war on women's health agenda. And last week, she wrote a critical piece on the recent so-called auto insurance reform bill that is now law. She's a registered nurse and nursing consultant and also a founding member of the progressive group Women Organize Michigan. She also ran on a progressive platform as a state Senate candidate last fall and barely lost in the 15th district. And that district also includes South Lyon, Novi, and not exactly known as a bastion of deep blue progressivism, yet she did very well there. And she did not shy away from her platform and nearly won. And that's courage, and it's that kind of courage that I wanted to highlight on Left of Lansing this week. I'd like to welcome Julia Pulver to the podcast. Julia, thanks a lot for being on. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate your kind and encouraging words.
I just mentioned how you lost in a close race for the state Senate seat in the 15th district. I'm pretty sure probably about 5 years ago that the Democratic Party never thought that it would really have an actual shot at winning. And yet, Julia, you did. How did you make it such a close race?
Well, I'll tell you, they didn't even think they could do that 2 years ago or a year ago. When I was looking at my district, you know, and looking at everything that had happened and looking at the things that really, you know, the people cared about, they were not partisan issues. You know, roads are not partisan. Clean water is not partisan. Being able to see a doctor when you need to is not a partisan issue. And I had watched really people resist some of the worst things that were coming down the pike by telling their stories and by standing up and saying, hey, no, we're people too. And the people of this district were no different. And there are very personal needs did not fall into this traditional, you know, Republicans agenda that you would see. And I said, you know what, these people have not had anybody really try to fight to represent them. And it was not just Republicans, it was everybody was telling you, like, why bother? Like, such a red district. You know that's a Republican district, right? And I got a lot of, like, good for you. That's adorable, you know? Honestly, I just said, you know what, our ideas are better. Like, what I want to do for this district is going to actually help people. And I'm not going to listen to that. And so really, it was knocking on doors. It was talking to people. It was this groundswell of volunteer activity because people were motivated. They were like, we want something better. You're talking about all the things we really care about. And we can see how, you know, if you were to be in there, our actual daily lives would be better. And I heard from so many people when I knocked on doors and all my volunteers, you know, we heard the same thing over and over again. Everyone would make the same joke and say, oh, I'm the only Democrat in Wixom. I'm the only Democrat in Milford. I'm the only Democrat in White Lake. I would say, really, because I just talked to 50 of your neighbors who all told me the same exact joke. And you're not alone. So there was a lot of isolationism. People who are living in these areas that have always been deemed Republican feel isolated and feel like their vote doesn't matter, that they're just this little tiny blue dot in the sea of red. And so a lot of times they didn't even feel motivated to come out to vote because they really didn't feel like it mattered. So I feel like we helped them feel like they weren't quite so alone. And then some people who really aren't dyed in the wool either way, I heard a lot of people say, well, I'm going to vote for you because you took the time to come out and talk to me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a primary because, again, like, nobody who is doing this for a living is making bets on what, you know, districts can flip and who. They were like, oh, good, we have a person running. Great, check. You know, like, I don't have to worry about that. We just want to make sure everyone's got a choice in every district. But it was never on anyone's list of anything that could be targeted. And it wasn't until the primary where I got more votes, total votes, than both of the Republicans who ran in that primary against each other got that people started to pay attention and went, whoa, hold on a second. This is a district we should be looking at. And then there was this sort of scramble to still try to read the tea leaves. I'm like, well, was this real or was this a fluke or was this, there's still so much indecision. And I was like, well, you guys can do whatever you want. I'm going to keep going. You know, like, we're not slowing down. We kept going and kept trying to build momentum and kept trying to get the word out there, you know, that it is important to get out there and vote down ballot. We had straight party ticket voting taken away for this last election. So it wasn't even necessarily like get out and vote, but it was vote all the way down the ticket. Please don't stop at congressional rep or governor. Like, you need to vote, like, and then flip it over for our ballot measures. And I think that just goes to show every district should be a targeted district. Every district is flippable. If you have the right person, if you have the right person who's willing to work hard, and despite whatever they're going to throw at you, they went from this district being solid red to lean red to toss up. And it was just because we were willing to put in the work. So in this district that Jim Runstead was supposed to have zero problem walking into, the Republican Party had to spend $1 million attacking me to hold on to this seat.
Wow.
And they did.
Yeah.
And that's what I kind of wish everybody would know. I see some of my friends and other people who are running and colleagues in there. They think if they're the perfect person and they have a perfect record and they're so nice, there's nothing bad that the Republicans are going to say, right? They're not going to lay a glove on you. You're not going to face a challenge. Even if there's nothing for them to say, they will make it up. They made stuff up about me. They oddly photoshopped my face and put it on flyers, fake websites and stuff. They doxed me. They put my cell phone out in an ad and told people to call me and harass me at my phone, you know, on my
really?
Phone.
They did they that? Did. Really?
They did. They absolutely wow. did. And but, you know, honestly, there were some people who called me and then I had good conversations with them okay. and they realized I was not a scary caricature. I was not the Wicked Witch of Western Oakland County who was going to come and take their gun. They're going to attack you. If it's on something of substance, okay, then be prepared to defend that. But even if they got nothing, they will make it up. So don't run scared thinking, oh, I can't do this because they're going to attack me on it. They're going to attack you either way. So just lead with your gut, lead with your heart, be true to your values. And at the end of the day, we have better ideas than they do. And that's why we're going to win.
Right. We're talking with Julia Pulver here on the Left of Lansing podcast. Well, you know, everything you just said there, I think it just comes back to something that I've been advocating for a long time is that Democrats for years, not every Democrat, of course, but it just seems like it's been in the playbook that, you know what, sometimes run to the center or be careful or be safe. And don't worry, if you're just nice, the Republicans won't do anything to you and they'll play nice as well. And that never happens. And if there's one lesson that we learned here in Michigan in 2018 and that we even learned from your race, it's that if you run on bold ideas and could illustrate how those ideas could benefit voters, they probably back you. Even if they don't exactly agree with you on everything that you're advocating, they will respect you for at least presenting policies that are centered around backing the people, backing them.
Most people who are just living their lives, they're not policy wonks. You know, they don't eat and breathe and sleep politics. They don't, you know, pore over policy. They just want to know, how is this going to make my life better or worse? How is this going to affect me?
Yep.
It becomes our job to educate them on the reason we would want to do this or not do this is because this is how your life would be made better or worse. And then actually mean that. People tend to try to paint a really either big fantasy picture or sweep under the rug the way that it's actually going to hurt them. But I think the more that you're real with people and you can talk to them and meet them where they are. Most people, they want to go to work. They want to not get fired. They want to go see their kids. That's their life that they're living. And every once in a while, we come and knock on their door enough and tell them to go vote. It's on us to bring those things home and make them real and say, the reason you're so tired that you have to work these two full-time jobs because our minimum wage in our state is so low, if you're able to support the people who are going to pass the laws to make the minimum wage an actual living wage, this is going to make it so you're not so tired all the time.
Will you run again in a few years?
I'm not committing to anything either way right now. I do know that there are a lot of people who are in certain parties that are not mine who are kind of shaking in their boots that I might run, and God, do I love that. So I'm not going to rule anything out.
We're speaking with Julia Pulver. She's a registered nurse, nursing consultant, and founding member of the progressive group called Women Organize Michigan. All right. Well, Julia, I'd like to talk about this piece that you wrote on the new auto insurance reform bill. It's called Do Not Be Fooled. You Just Lost More Than You Got. In the piece, you highlighted how the new bill gets rid of the mandatory unlimited medical benefits of the old law and replaces it with a tier system in the name of getting cheaper insurance. And you write, PIP benefits are more than just your regular medical insurance benefits. Medical coverage is only a portion of what is covered under your PIP benefits. PIP stands for Personal Injury Protection and covers a wide variety of recovery services and benefits, not just traditional medical care. It covers vastly more MRIs, hospital and surgery costs. It covers so much more than prescription medications, casts, and doctor's appointments. In our currently broken medical system, it was the one remaining truly patient-focused system we had left, and now it's gone. You know, Julia, it's not until I read that paragraph that even I truly understood how deeply thousands of Michiganders are going to be harmed by this bill. Do you think, and I know I'm being really critical here, but do you think most lawmakers even knew these basic facts before voting on it?
No. Obviously, the issue of no fault is not a new one. It is something that has been talked about. So the overarching concerns from the brain injury community, the rehab community, the provider community, they've been known. They knew. And they maybe not totally knew. I think part of that sort of ignorance being bliss, being able to say, I didn't fully understand what was going to happen, which to me is no excuse. The whole way that this went down, was just inexcusable, and it's very anti-democratic, and I'm very sorry to say that. This was done by just as many people that are my friends as that are not my friends, and it was shocking. Even though they do listen to me and they have heard my concerns, we didn't really have time to really talk about the cascade of events that is going to happen now because of this. And it's those sort of sequences of events that I can see coming. It's like a train wreck in slow motion because I have dealt with these very specific cases over several years where I know when you take this away, then this thing happens. And when you say that happens, then this happens. And I can tell you, you know, the outcome of that is going to be people who are catastrophically injured. We're going to see a boom in our homeless population. We're going to see a boom in our prison population. I didn't even get to that. You know, we have a lot of people with brain injuries who are protected right now in these rehab facilities and are not in our prison system. You know, they have behaviors, they have things that would not fly anywhere else. You know, you put this person in a nursing home and they start a fire, they're going to jail. They're not going to say, well, it's okay that they started this fire because they have this brain injury. You know, they understand that in other places, and they're able to keep them from doing that kind of harm. Even in locked units, people who are able to cause harm, they're going to wind up in our prisons. And our homeless population is going to increase. When you take people out of facilities that were keeping them safe, there's only so many places they're going to go. And then, again, that falls back to taxpayers supporting the worst possible environment. There was a cap on attendant care at 56 hours a week that your family member was not able to provide more than that. There was this like bizarre philosophical disagreement that like, why on earth should we pay family members to work in their own homes for their families? Like, it was just seemed like they were trying to say this is a moral atrocity. Okay, well, you have somebody who has a spinal cord injury or somebody who is on a vent who needs someone to take care of them 24/7. Their needs don't go away, but now you've just put this arbitrary thing in place that where maybe you had trained their family member to be able to take care of them, and they were getting all of $15 an hour, right? You know, two family members 24/7. Well, now you've capped that. That person still needs that care. So now you're going to ask them, okay, well, for the rest of this time, now you have to have a home health care company come in, and they're going to charge your insurance company $25 an hour to do the same level of care. And then if that weird hybrid system of you and then someone else doesn't work out, you're going to have to put them in a long-term acute care hospital that deals with, and there's only so many that will deal with patients on a ventilator with a trach. Those cost $1,500, $1,600 a day. So now you've just quintupled the amount of money that we had been spending letting family members take care of their catastrophically injured family members in their own homes because of your weird moral outrage, when really what they want to do is have people then just work for free. Yeah. But essentially that's what they want to do. They want to just cap your income, but then expect you to still care for that family member for free. Mm. You know, that was like the most fiscally stupid thing, you know, one of the many very fiscally stupid things I saw in this bill was like, wait a second. And that's the bottom line. People's need for care doesn't go away. You've just made it harder for them to get that care and shifted the burden and shifted the cost. The insurance company will always be fine. This was never about solvency for them. This was about them wanting to make even more money. Like, not more money, like even more, like money on money on money. But you've always been able to sort of shift the narrative to blame those darn quadriplegics. Right. They're the ones that are really raking you over the coals. It's not us.
Right. And I think one of the problems is that many people think, well, you know what? This is never going to affect me. So why do I care? I was reading this piece from Jared Skorup from the Conservative Mackinac Center for Public Policy. I've had him here on the podcast before. And he wrote this week, and I'm just going to quote, and then I'm just going to want your reaction. He said that lawmakers and Governor Whitmer reformed the current system by providing drivers with options. No one will be forced to buy the previous coverage, which was extremely expensive and used by only a few. Drivers can choose a lower amount of coverage at a lower premium price if they have medical coverage through some other insurer. But even with these changes, Michigan's auto insurance coverage will still be by far the most generous in the nation. So the hundreds of millions of Americans in the 49 other states will still be even worse off than Michiganders are supposedly going to be. What would be your response to Jared Skorup?
Firstly, the notion that catastrophic insurance is the same as your medical insurance, again, is just flat out wrong. But at least with your medical insurance, and this is the other part that I sort of tried to kind of come down hard on my fellow Democrats is like, you know, we used to always be the party that wanted to increase people's access to healthcare, right? Like that's always been sort of our bedrock.
Yes.
And now we've taken that away under the guise of choice. So with your regular medical insurance, if you know, you know what, I've got diabetes, I've got hypertension, I've got a lot of regular meds I take, like I'm probably going to need to get like this, like you can make those choices, right? Or if you're like, you know what, I'm young, I don't have any chronic conditions, I don't take any medications, I just want, you know, if I get a ear infection or my kids need to break their arms, like we need to just have sort of like basic, like you can plan for that. Nobody plans on getting in a car accident. So no one is going to say, you know what, I'm fine this year, I can go with the bare bones this year, but next year's when I'm going to have that really bad brain injury accident, so next year I'm going to make sure I'm shift to that. Like no one does that. So we're preying on people's desperation to lower their bills, but then telling them like, oh, but you get more choice. And we all like choices. Who doesn't like choices? Like we all like choices. Except no one chooses this. And, you know, there are a lot of other states that do not offer the same kind of protections. There are states where you have to sue to get any sort of coverage. You have to sue the other driver and go through that 3-year-long process. Even if you don't have a catastrophic injury, say you get in a car accident and you break your leg and you are out of work for 4 months because you can't walk on it. Maybe you do it, you know, you're a waitress. You work in an assembly line, right? You work somewhere very physical and you're not allowed to come back to work where you physically can't work until it's healed. You're kind of SOL, right? You know, your regular medical insurance is like, and we'll pay for your broken leg, but we're not going to do anything else. Your PIP benefit will pay, just like a short-term disability plan will pay your lost wages. You will get a check every month to keep your bills current. Like that's part of what you pay for. So there's all of those sort of gaps in the whole process that had been filled in by no fault. So I think it was comprehensive. It was whatever they need to do, they're going to pay for that. They're going to pay for your house so you can have a ramp. I use snark every once in a while. In my response post, you know, on my Facebook, I said, you know, they're going to see a lot more GoFundMes for people urgently needing to raise money to get a ramp put in their house so they can be discharged from the hospital and actually get into their house.
But that's just it, Julia, is that it's astounding that there are so many Republicans out there who probably really do believe that GoFundMe sites are the perfect answer to our healthcare crisis. It's unconscionable, but I do believe many, many think that's the way we should go. Unreal. All right. Well, Julia Pulver, thank you very much for being on. If anybody would like to find you on Twitter and on Facebook, how can they find you?
At Vote Pulver is my handle for both.
Okay, that's simple. Well, listen, Julia, thanks again for being on. And since you already mentioned Wixom, let me just tell you, if you haven't done it yet, spend an evening, one night on a pontoon boat on Loon Lake. Trust me, you will not regret it, okay? You won't regret it. I guarantee it.
I live in the neighborhood near it. I don't have, like, live on the lake money. We live in a neighborhood that connects to Middle Straits Lake. So I'm very much a lake person. So
all right.
I will take you up on that.
All right. Well, Julia Pulver, thanks again for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Pat.
The Left of Lansing podcast is available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, and, of course, on leftoflansing.com. Word has it, that's Rick Snyder's favorite site. Contact Pat at leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, back to Pat Johnston.
Thanks again to Julia Pulver for being on the podcast this week and for offering her expert insight on medical care when it comes to Michigan's new auto insurance reform bill. But there was another part of the interview, I have to admit, that struck me. It's when Ms. Pulver reminded all progressives that if you just do the hard work of talking with voters, actually going and talking with voters, communicating with voters, and explain with courage how our policies will benefit them, then you'll get a lot closer to the ultimate prize rather than not. I always love some of these Democrats out there who try to say they're progressive, but the record shows they're anything but. Hey, look, it's fine if you want to run as a centrist. That's fine, no problem. Just admit what you're doing, that you're running as a centrist. Don't try to say that you're really a progressive. And as we have seen through the years, whenever Democrats believe running to that mythical political center yields victorious results, All right. Well, then just look at the White House. Just look at the U.S. Senate. Who's running the Senate? And who's running the courts? As we saw in Michigan, if you run on bold ideas and refuse to run a Republican-like campaign, you'll get rewarded. Why? Because the facts are on our side. Time for the Left of Lansing last call. I will admit that I was feeling a touch pessimistic when it came to Governor Whitmer and Line 5 in the Straits of Mackinac when reports said that the Whitmer administration and the Canadian oil giant Enbridge were trying to work out a deal so Enbridge could construct that tunnel to keep the pipeline in the Straits. I'll admit, I thought the deal was done. And I wondered how Whitmer's environmental backers would react to such a deal. Thankfully, though, my pessimism might be proved wrong again. Apparently, negotiations have fallen through. Now, recall that Enbridge originally said that it would need a decade to build this tunnel to protect the old Line 5 oil pipeline. Then, last week, Enbridge said it could miraculously get this tunnel project done in 5 years. Wait, 10 years? And now 5 years. That's remarkable. How convenient. This is the same company that got caught lying when it refused to disclose problems with its protective coating for 3 years. This is the same company that spilled over 1 million gallons of oil into the Kalamazoo River. And as Inside Climate Change noted last year, the Canadian oil pipeline company responsible for one of the largest inland oil spills on record has agreed to pay a $1.8 million fine for failing to thoroughly inspect its pipelines for weaknesses as required under a 2016 agreement. Federal officials say Enbridge did not carry out timely and thorough inspections on one of its pipeline systems as it had agreed to do as part of a consent decree reached with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the U.S. Department of Justice. The 2016 settlement stemmed from a massive 2010 oil spill in Michigan's Kalamazoo River. The spill required years and more than $1 billion to clean up, and it highlighted the hazards of pumping heavy tar oil sands through pipelines. So why again should this company be trusted at all, I ask you? Why? All right, well, Enbridge is going to court right now to see if its agreement with the previous Snyder administration to build a tunnel for the 66-year-old pipeline still stands. Democratic Attorney General Dana Nessel recently ruled the agreement was unconstitutional. You see, for Enbridge, it's not about the people. No, it's all about the bottom line. It's all about Enbridge. It's never about safety. It's never about the people, and it's never about the environment. And right-wingers wonder why the Green New Deal is capturing the attention of millions of Americans. Oh, and I can't forget how a government report issued just this week showed how Line 5 barely escaped a spill of epic proportions when it was struck by a 12,000-pound anchor last year. Just think of what could have happened. It almost did happen. In the meantime, Governor Whitmer has announced the formation of a task force to find other ways to deliver propane to the UP, perhaps by truck or rail or other methods. She's signaling that it's time to move on from the past. You cannot stay stuck in the past, especially when it comes to energy. We have to move into the future. We have to find a cleaner and more expensive solution for the UP residents other than having to rely on this old oil pipeline. And by the way, UP residents are already paying high energy costs. Not that Enbridge cares, of course. The governor's move gained some praise by AG Nessel, who sent a statement this week. Enbridge has made clear its primary focus is its bottom line. And while the governor and I work in tandem to decommission Line 5 as quickly as possible to protect our Great Lakes and the health and safety of our residents, her task force is a necessary step to ensure we meet the energy needs of all of our state's residents for generations to come. That's right. You see, it's about the future. It's up to us to keep the pressure on the Democratic leadership in the state to decommission Line 5 sooner rather than later. But right now, I'm cautiously optimistic, Governor.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wanderbeats. To hear more, visit wanderbeats.net. That's wanderbeats.net. Now back to Pat Johnston.
All right, one more quick note before I sign off here for the week. Michigan Advance editor-in-chief and friend of the podcast, Susan Demas, had a poignant take on a recent poll regarding the Michigan GOP's efforts to ban dilation and extraction abortions, otherwise known as D&E abortions. The Detroit News reports that in a poll of 600 likely voters commissioned by Glenn Gariff Group and released to the Detroit News and WDIV-TV in Detroit, 58% of voters said they opposed the new restriction that would charge doctors with a 2-year criminal offense for performing the procedure, while 31% supported the restriction. Wow, that's quite the gap there, and it shows that our side is winning big time. Susan then tweeted, 58% don't support Right to Life of Michigan's ban on a standard abortion procedure, so I'm sure their lobbyists will respect the will of the people and drop their ballot measure. Yeah, I'm with Susan Snark, and I don't believe this poll will change the extreme right-wing and corrupt Michigan Republican Party at all. They have women to punish, and no poll is going to get in their way. But we can get in their way and stop them from further damaging our great state. We do that by staying involved. We do that by staying engaged. And we do that by staying informed. For years, they walked all over us. Those days are done. We can win if only what? Come on, say it with me. We take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston. Just kidding, this thing isn't researched. And broadcasted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance provided by the wonderful Dr. Heather. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information and Pat's musical taste, if you can handle it. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.